In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode of Conspiracy Unlimited, who or what is behind the modern-day alien abduction phenomenon? A race of technologically advanced extraterrestrials or fallen angels as described in the Bible? My guest believes the answer to these questions are to be found in Holy Scripture.
This phenomenon suddenly brings to life the story of the demigods being the children of the fallen angels, or being the children of the sons of God, as the Bible calls them, and giving, you know, birth to this great antediluvian empire that is destroyed with Atlantis as its capital. And then they continue after the flood all the way till the time of King David, when really it's only at that time that most of them are done away with, as Israel is appointed by God to be his sword in the destruction of these hybrid offsprings.
This podcast is brought to you by Logo Creator 7 Software. These days, it's more important than ever to have a good image, especially if you have a small business or you sell stuff online or post on social media. But quality graphics can cost money, and advanced software like Photoshop takes time to learn. That's why I want to tell you about some amazing piece of software called Creator 7. Creator 7 is so easy to use, yet it lets you create super-looking logos, business cards, character mascots, you name it, in just minutes. Whatever you create is really going to look super cool and very impressive. Creator 7 comes with hundreds of ready-made templates. Just click and drag to make changes, and instantly you have really impressive graphics right on your computer. Some clever folks even have ordered the Creator 7 software to start their own logo-making business, creating and selling logos and graphics for a profit. That's how good it is. But you won't believe the price. Creator 7 creates beautiful logos and designs right on your computer and works on either PC or Mac. And right now, it's available at an amazing price. To see it in action, just visit radioshowlogo.com. That's radioshowlogo.com. RadioShowLogo.com.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serrett.
Well, I've been sorting through our Christmas cards here at the house, fewer and fewer every year. More people sending e-cards by email. Some people post videos on YouTube. And those are all great, I guess, but I'm a bit of a throwback. I always feel it's nice to get cards through the mail. And of course, occasionally something happens. You say the wrong thing or hold the wrong opinion, and before you know it, you're taken off somebody's Christmas card list. Has that ever happened to you? I'll give you an example. What I'm about to tell you does not go over well with many in the ufology community or with many UFO ET experiencers. But as a Christian, I always put everything through my faith filter, and I try to figure out how do certain things, like UFOs, ETs, the ancient alien theory, and yes, the alien abduction phenomenon, how do they square with the Bible? And as a Bible-believing Christian, I believe we humans are unique within God's creation. I don't believe in extraterrestrials, but I do believe in UFOs. I do believe people are seeing some sort of space vehicle. I even believe certain people are abducted. But the question is, who or what is piloting these spacecrafts? And who or what is behind the alien abduction phenomenon? I believe, as does my guest, the answer to these questions are to be found in the Bible. Ali Siadatan is the founder of Think Again Productions in Canada, a multimedia teaching ministry shedding light on mysteries and treasures of scriptural knowledge, which is making the Bible more real than ever. Ali has found evidence that keeps agreeing with the Bible's tale, from biblical cities peering through the sand to alien abductions and prophetic events. In 2006, Think Again Productions released the groundbreaking documentary UFOs, Angels, and Gods on Google Video, where it received 270,000 views in just 9 months. His latest project, yet to be released, is a video series called Goliath Rising, Hybrids, Nephilim, and Titans. Ali Siadatan, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you, my friend?
Fine. Thank you, Richard. Thank you for having me.
It's been a decade since you released your documentary film, UFOs, Angels, and Gods. What's been going on in the field of ufology within the biblical context during this passage of time?
Well, it's amazing. When we were researching this, it was in the 90s. It was earlier days, and there were people even researching it before that. But in the past 10 years, there really has been an explosion of research. It's as though a veil is being removed. It's like an unveiling of information that has been present in the Bible and in the reality outside our windows, but hidden from our consciousness. And for some reason in the time that we live in, it's as though someone's removing the veil, and the number of people who are encouraged, inspired, intrigued to look into it is increasing all the time. Coming back and being on shows and talking about it, I'm shocked at the number of venues that are available for this conversation to be had. Or, you know, I think it was in 1996 that I Googled Nephilim for the first time, the word Nephilim, which is a biblical term, and that relates to all of this topic. It was Yahoo. It was before Google. I mean, Yahoo was a search engine, and it simply said zero search results found. And today, you know, if you Google it, you'll see the number of search results is very, very high. In fact, I can do it right now as we're speaking and give you the exact number. So there's been an explosion of research, of interest, and that's really encouraged me. It wasn't some kooky, strange thing that was just my own particular curiosity. This really was the beginning of an awakening into a very important topic.
The idea that ancient astronauts, and the ancient astronaut theory is essentially a deception, that ancient civilizations weren't given technology by a race of extraterrestrials, but in fact... these extraterrestrials were fallen angels. They were the Nephilim. That's sort of the general premise. Just expand on that a little bit, if you could.
Sure. When you look back into the birth of civilization, it is pretty enigmatic, and even archaeologists, secular archaeologists who are honest, will tell you that they don't have an explanation for the birth of civilization. All kinds of bodies of knowledge that are very advanced appear pretty suddenly in the cradle of civilization, as it's called, Iraq, the south of Iraq. And then even before that, for instance, off the coast of Taiwan, China, there's these giant pyramids that are under the water in the ocean, and they are, 10,000 plus years old, BC, 12,000 from us. And people really don't have explanations for these things. And a group of people looked into Darwin's theories and speculated that, hey, all of these ancient texts talk about flying gods coming and bringing this knowledge to various civilizations, giving the codes of civilization and astronomy and mathematics, architecture, very specific bodies of knowledge. And today, we can fly around the planet. We can look into Galileo's telescope and stare into the heavens. And there's even talk of, UFOs. Even this week, there was already an article in New York Times about the Pentagon looking into it seriously. And so there's constantly talk of this in our culture as well. So some people connected the dots in Darwinian paradigm, and they said, okay, aliens existed today. Well, aliens existed then, and they're the ones who gave this information to our ancestors. For reasons, you kind of can make up your reason, because there's no reason other than whatever you make up. They haven't communicated that to people. But coming from the biblical point of view, a lot of us who were students of these ancient texts, the truth is not just of the Bible. People who were looking into ancient Hindu texts, they suddenly looked at the story of the Vimanas, which is the modern-day term for aeroplane in Hindi. Looking into many of these ancient myths, the UFO phenomenon and the reality of the possibility of space travel really brought these ancient texts out of the realm of mythology. And the Bible as well. Now, you can take the perspective that even in the Bible there's Darwinian aliens, or you can take the Bible at its word and allow it to tell you who these beings are that interact with ancient Israel, Elijah goes up in a chariot of fire, Jesus ascends into something that takes him away. There's all kinds of stories of the Jewish people being led, outside of Egypt, out of Egypt. There's lots of stories of beings coming to the earth and interacting with humans and giving information to humans. Even the angel that sat on the tomb of Jesus, we are to understand that it's a physical being that can sit on top of something. Or in Sodom and Gomorrah, it says that the men of Sodom we're interested in having sexual relations with these angels. And so there's really a lot of, clues that tell us that, for instance, God and his angels have food with Abraham. What if these characters are actually the characters the Bible says they are, except we are now understanding a little more into how is it that the heavens and the earth connect together because of where we are in our own thinking. Now, from this point of view, when we look into the ancient cultures and ask ourselves, who does the Bible say the gods of these ancient civilizations were? Who were the gods of Egypt, of Greece, of Rome, of Persia, of Mesopotamia, of China, of India? Who were the gods of these nations, which were essentially our collective ancestry? I was born in Iran, so it's our collective ancestry. Who were these guys? Well, it's surprising to discover that apparently the Bible sees them as what Christians call fallen angels. The proper term inside of the scripture is actually sons of God. That's what they're called, Bene Ha-Elohim in Hebrew. And the reason we call them fallen angels in Christian culture is because we see them having a rebellious will against the one who is called the God of gods. In the Bible, there's a character called the God of Gods in the Bible. And again, God can't be the leader of mythological beings. So we tend to call these guys fallen angels. But the term fallen angel, it should be noted, doesn't actually exist anywhere in the Bible. It's a term of Christian culture. In the Bible, they're called sons of God.
Right.
The Bnei HaElohim. And the Nephilim are their hybrid offsprings.
Right.
So
the giants. Kind of, the giants of the Middle East.
Yes, and they have a purpose as well in the story. Yes, the giants, the titans of old.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I hadn't realized that the term fallen angels is nowhere to be found in Scripture. That's a new one on me. Ali Siadatan is with us. Why can't both narratives be correct? Why can't the ancient alien theory be correct? We have, of course, the Dogon culture in Africa, who talk about star people from the Sirius constellation coming down. Yeah. In their Genesis story, of course, we have the Anunnaki, a new Sumerian Genesis story.
Yes.
Why can't both narratives be correct? Yes, we have fallen angels and demons and angels, but then we also have the Darwinian extraterrestrials.
Yes. Yeah, aliens. That's a very good question. Let me break it down a little bit so we can kind of look at it. What we're looking for essentially is a narrative, a story that ties all these clues together, and then that story kind of wins out because we go, okay, this is a complete explanation that encompasses all the elements that we are empirically discovering from archaeology, from ancient writings, from modern witnesses. Oh, look, this theory binds them all together, and therefore the weight shifts in the direction of that theory. So fundamentally, there are two perspectives. One is that life is born of accident and coincidence, and there's beings, you know, that through chance grew here on this planet and struggled, and somehow we're now taking the theory and we are extending it into the heavens and making either further assumption that this also occurred out there. And so at this point, we see these sporadic events, like, oh, you know, there are some stories of this guy among the native people, among the ancient Mesopotamians, and modern people even talk about it. So it's just a sporadic thing. And then, you know, we can now fill in the blanks with our own thinking. Why would these aliens be coming here? We're making the assumption that evolution is true here and elsewhere, and then we are filling the blanks because, you know, they haven't really told us. Now there are people who say that they're being abducted and that they're receiving some sort of an explanation. And, you know, it's hard for us to completely believe them as prophets of aliens, if you will, and say, yes, you know, you're right. So there's this kind of on one side of the scale. On the other side of the scale, what we're actually noticing as the veil is being removed is that there is an incredible coherence from the stories that are handed down from ancient times. As you said, there's, for instance, the term sky people, so they're always coming from the heavens, from the sky. The architecture, whether you look at the pyramids of the New World built here in the Americas or the ones in Egypt or the ones in Mesopotamia, it's clearly that, you know, the source of the knowledge must have been the same because the architecture, the mathematics that's behind it is remarkably similar. You mentioned the story of the Anunnaki, for instance, in Mesopotamia. Well, Mesopotamia is where the earliest parts of the biblical narrative unfold. Apparently, it's the origin of the main branch of the human race. And yes, in those places, there are the tales of the sons of God and the daughters of men, and their children are these hybrid offsprings, which the Mesopotamians would call Anunnaki, and we tend to call them Nephilim. From the Hebrew, the Greeks may call them Titans. In English, I would say the general word is demigods, but you suddenly see, well, the Greeks are talking about them, the Indians are talking about them in their Vedic texts, the Chinese are talking about them, the Mesopotamians are talking about them, the Romans are talking about them, and if you kind of look at it from the perspective of these ancient cultures, this was sacred knowledge, this was history, this was something they all respected. And then the Bible also provides the same story, and so you go, okay, this must have had a historical root, and then all of these stories don't seem so sporadic. They are pointing to a single source, it seems. Whoever these guys are, the way they're interacting with these ancient civilizations seems to be controlled by a mastermind. There's a plan, and so how do we find out what this plan is? Well, the creationist perspective, which the Bible gives us, by the way, you know, the Bible is unique in its structure. It took me a long time to appreciate this because of the way that, you know, we've all kind of been affected perhaps by Christianity or biblical thinking. We've all kind of been in some ways maybe hurt, discouraged, or we kind of look at it and it seems like, you know, why do I want to even understand anything about religion or the wars of religion? Well, outside of all of that, someone like me who came from a literature background and appreciates good stories, what I noticed is that the biblical narrative was the only one from all of these ancient texts, whether it's the Vedic text, the Zoroastrian, the Mesopotamian, Enuma Elish, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Zoroastrian Avesta, or even the modern Bhagavad Gita that is used among Hindus, or even the mighty Quran. All of these texts, they are different from the Bible in a sense. The Bible actually tells a story that unfolds through history with characters that live in actual physical cities that can be dug up or are still known of us, like Rome or Jerusalem, and they come from families that we know about, that we have writings about. They live through events that are supported by incredible amount of extra-biblical sources. And in the middle of this narrative that is spanning history, a spiritual story is unfolding because it's the story of the one who was made in the image of God, and God is very much involved in the story, but so are other beings. So as you kind of follow the narrative, suddenly the narrative is able to explain to you history and who these other beings are and what was the nature of their connection to these ancient cultures and why they connected. And then as though that wasn't already, you know, a lot of information, there's this other dimension of the text that comes, which is the prophetic. Suddenly, the future is also explained, and now you can see if history unfolds, the millions of events that must come together for history to unfold in the way this book is claiming, by people who don't read it or believe in it. They all have to play their parts, and you realize, wow, history does move forward in this direction. Now, all of these ancient tales and where we are in the story and where the story is going fall within a very comprehensive narrative that is very compelling, and for me and many others shifts the evidence squarely in the court of creationism and says, you know, now we see that even though there may be a multitude of beings in the multitude of worlds in the vastness of the heavens, they all answer to the one God that we read about in the Bible, and us and them, we are part of a story, and this story seems to involve all of these various civilizations, even the ones that existed before the time of Adam, like the ones you pointed to, like the Dogon culture, and the ones that are even older than Adam. You know, they also had relations with these angels, because
right.
The Bible says that.
But so, is there mention of fallen angels or the equivalent of Nephilim, whether we call them titans or giants, in other religious texts like the Quran, like the Hindu writings and so forth. Do we hear about fallen angels?
That's a really good question. Let me put it this way. There is not a single text in which they are not mentioned. Yes, it is one of the chief topics of human literature. The story of the gods and of their children, it is the basis of all the religions of the world other than the Judeo-Christian one. That is what, you know, that's who the Greeks worshipped, Zeus and his children. That the Vedic texts, the first and the oldest, the most respected of the Vedic texts of India, the foundation and fountainhead of Vedic Hinduism, is the story of Indra. Actually, I have it right now in front of me, the Rig Veda. And the story of Indra is the story of a demigod, as the book explains. And he is worshipped. The Mesopotamians, of course, they had, you know, when we discovered the great library of Ashurbanipal, the French were digging in Nineveh, and then they took a day off, and the British dug in their section, and they discovered the library of the great king of Nineveh, who was deposed by the Babylonians in 612 BC, Ashurbanipal. There were 25,000 tablets in his library, and they were neatly divided in the various sections of knowledge, you know, medicine, architecture, mathematics, etc. But most of the library was dedicated to the gods and their children, and the epitaphs, attributes, and deeds of the gods and of their offsprings.
That's interesting. But here's you mentioned medicine, and earlier you mentioned libraries and things that were springing up in Sumeria, where elsewhere people were still living in mud huts, and how to account for this amazing technology coming out of Sumer. Why would fallen angels, who presumably hate mankind, why would they give mankind medicine and agriculture and libraries and knowledge? If they hate mankind so much, why wouldn't they simply have erased
us? That is a very good question, and that question takes us to the very heart of the story. The when you look at the beginnings of the biblical story that takes us to the Middle East and takes us to the cradle of civilization, it says that there was two guys, to Adam and Eve, and the man and the woman, and their first son, Cain, he goes ahead and builds a city. And to do that, well, he needs to understand geometry, he needs to be able to measure things, and then he needs to understand architecture, and geometria and architectura are two of the most ancient bodies of science at the foundation of the human civilization. So when God tells to Adam that he has to go and subdue the world and organize it and rule it and govern it, he has to give him some bits of knowledge to do that. And we see that Cain's children, you know, there's one who is the fountainhead of music, and we see all of these ancient musical instruments. It says that, you know, all the music instruments of string and of wind come from this particular guy. So we see these ancient artifacts of music, of harps that we dig up from the Middle East that are, you know, in the great museums of Europe, especially in London and in Berlin. And so there's another one who Tubal-Cain, he's the first of the metallurgists. So you realize that these guys, to start with themselves, were endowed with bodies of knowledge, whether it's genetically, like, you know, just that, you know, like your kid starts to grow up and you see them and they have all kinds of knowledge innately inside of them. I mean, the first time I saw my little girl trying to trick me and how young she was, I thought, wow, she knows about tricking? Like, where? I never taught her this. So, you know, so there's a huge amount of knowledge. You know, we start to talk to each other, and grammar is very complicated, and persuasion, you know, rhetoric, that's one of the great gifts, so we persuade each other. And so these are bodies of knowledge. Humans start out with knowledge, including farming, because it says that Adam was put in the garden to till and toil it, and then when he left, he also continued to do that, and we see from anthropology and archaeology that from the Fertile Crescent emerges the first farming settlement.
Sure. Some was given to us, obviously, by God. But how do we know which knowledge was given to us, imparted from fallen angels?
Right. So then what we see is that at the beginning of the corruption of knowledge, The book of Enoch tells us that there are seven angels who imparted seven bodies of knowledge to us, and often in many of the ancient texts, including one that I was reading the other day that comes from the native tradition, and it says that seven balls of fire fell from the Pleiades, which is one of the constellations mentioned by name in the Bible.
Ah.
And often, you know, when you talk to modern-day people, who say, oh, you know, we talked to some alien who said they're from the Pleiades. And, you know, so once we get out there, we'll understand better how these things work. Are they gateways into other systems? Are they actually systems within themselves? But there are seven bodies of knowledge and that are given. And when you look at these bodies of knowledge, they're all corruptions and perversions. I'll give you one example. Azazel, the leader of the Horde, he gives the knowledge of breastplates, of swords, of weaponry. So the knowledge of metallurgy is among us, but Azazel says, well, did you know that you can turn this into weapons? You can turn into swords, you can turn into breastplates. And that's interesting because later on, when God begins to bring the world out of chaos into order and explain his law and his order through Abraham, God begins to say that he will take the swords and then he will turn them back into plowshares, reversing the decree, the corruption that Azazel introduces. God decrees against that.
But wait a second, Ali. But Jesus also called on his disciples to pick up a sword. And if you don't have one, sell your cloak and get one.
Yeah. So as these bodies of knowledge pour into the human world, when we see in the book of Enoch that the decree is given against the Nephilim, that they are to mutually kill each other, that spirit should be given them, and the fallen angels are to be arrested and jailed, God says, allow the bodies of knowledge to remain among the humans. And so the bodies of knowledge remain among us, and then from then on, they are used both by the dark side to continue to corrupt the world in order to bring about a empire, a kingdom. I mean, that's what the whole Masonic movement is about. And when you look at the books of the Masons, Nimrod was the first one. It's not about the building of just, you know, buildings, like, oh, we're going to build a big pyramid. It's about showing how all of these bodies of knowledge put together can give man the power to do anything he wants. And that's what the Tower of Babel is about. They were united, it says, and they could do anything they wanted. Why? Because they had these bodies of knowledge intertwined and understood deeply among themselves. So these bodies of knowledge are given to corrupt the creation of God, to corrupt the natural knowledge that we have, and then to be used to create an empire with hybrids in their midst, with a representative of the fallen angels in their midst. And this is to replace the human race into the heavens. The two gifts of this knowledge ultimately are immortality. That is one of the gifts that is trying to, you know, come through this knowledge. And the other is this incredible ability to understand the deep mechanisms of the creation and be able to manipulate it at a deep level in order to create, you know, very foul things but powerful things. And to create an entire structure, an order that stands strong. The purpose of this body of knowledge is because in order to reach the full potential, you need knowledge. And so God then, you know, explains how this knowledge should be used. Okay, the sword is not going to be used for murdering. It's going to be used for defense because the murderers may come. And these things will have a season. Eventually, the season will come when this knowledge is drained back out and replaced with something that is not corrupt and is edifying and wonderful and deep, but is in harmony with the love and wisdom and righteousness that pours out of the throne of the universe, of the center of the universe. So there is definitely an attempt to build a pseudo-structure to the very kingdom that God is building in the middle of the universe that involves, you know, apparently Christ and us. And so you need the knowledge to compete with that structure of that kingdom that is full of knowledge and full of wisdom and full of all kinds of understandings. To create your version of it, you need to give knowledge. So there's knowledge to corrupt the knowledge that God has given and to use it, you know, for their sake, to bring about a different world order. And I think that's what the true work of a Mason is to accomplish that.
Well, you mentioned knowledge to create. Let me give folks listening to the podcast some knowledge to create. If you're looking for a world-class website host at a fair price, there's a company I want to tell you about, Pear Networks. Pear Networks hosts hundreds of thousands of websites. And why do I recommend them? It's simple. Because they set the standard for excellence with a technical support staff that's second to none. Their support team responds so fast and they always give straight answers. That's important. Plus, they have top of the line technology. And that's why Pear Networks offers total reliability for your website with a money back guarantee. So whether you're a professional web designer, a busy web marketer, or you're just getting a site online, Pear Networks has a web hosting plan that's right for you. Log on and learn more at pear.com. Let me spell it out for you. P-A-I-R.com. P-A-I-R.com. Pear Networks.
As you're staring up at the night sky, ever wonder who's staring back? No, me either. But I guess you better say it because of Richard, you know, he's all wrapped up in this stuff. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Ali Siadatan is my guest, documentary filmmaker, UFOs, Angels, and Gods. Tell us about your latest project, Goliath Rising, Hybrids, Nephilim, and Titans.
Yes. You know, you were asking at the beginning of the broadcast, how much is it that what has changed in the past 10 years? And I'm saying that knowledge has increased concerning these things. Like, I was just Googling Nephilim, and there are 6 million results found. When in 1996, when I put it in Yahoo, there was zero search results found. So this latest project, first of all, is drawing from the latest research and the latest researchers and their perspectives and, you know, bringing the new things to light. I'll give you some examples. For instance, when we were looking at the alien abduction phenomenon, which is a global phenomenon, and I'm sure that many of your listeners or know people and their friends who are living this or they are living it themselves. That's how, you know, ubiquitous it is. So there's this phenomenon, and it suddenly brings to life the story of the demigods being the children of the fallen angels or being the children of the sons of God, as the Bible calls them, and giving, you know, birth to this great antediluvian empire that is destroyed with Atlantis as its capital. And then they continue after the flood all the way till the time of King David, when really it's only at that time that most of them are done away with. as Israel is appointed by God to be his sword in the destruction of these hybrid offsprings, suddenly all of this comes to life because of the modern-day phenomenon of humans, people, our friends, our doctors, our lawyers, our judges, our professors, coming forward and saying, this is happening to me in my private life. I'm being taken to a ship, and genetic material is removed from me, and an alien offspring. I just posted an article that was on a mainstream newspaper on my Facebook page, UFOs, Angels, and Gods, it's an interview with this guy in New York or New Jersey who has a job and who's saying that, you know, he wants to come out of the closet. He's 74 years old, and he wants to say that since he's been 18, he's been having a relationship with this hybrid.
Yes, I saw that.
And you saw that, right? And so this is kind of brought to life this ancient quote-unquote myth. And so the question became, well, what's going on here? Well, the Bible talks about an enmity between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. And because of the times we live in, and because of the multitude of prophecies coming true that concern the second coming of Christ, suddenly the idea came, oh, this is headed. This, the purpose of this is to create the seed of the serpent, which is going to be this world leader who rises and stands in the temple in Jerusalem, which means a temple must be built, calls himself God, and calls upon these incredible forces of that will appear like UFOs above him and behind him, and will really charm the world and rally the world against the second coming of Christ, of course. And so we ran out and said, you know, we really got to share this with the world. I think we're onto something here, not knowing that many other researchers independently were coming to the same conclusion in other parts of the world. But now, now, when we look at the phenomenon throughout the ages and the modern world, we have a larger perspective, for instance. This is a new information. One thing we're seeing is that, first of all, this was not just crisis. It wasn't as though the enemy was introducing these titans, these hybrids, these Nephilim, at specific times in history to stop the plans of God. It was about always from the beginning, about creating a new race that would replace the human race.
So that's what's behind the alien abduction phenomenon, is a hybrid program in the service or to create Satan's army. Is that right?
Well, to create a new race that would be not only his army but also his people grafted into ours, because we are the ones who are made in the image of God. And he's grafting in the many different houses of the sons of God, and they love their symbols, be it the sun, the star, the crescent, the moon, their symbols, the fork, like the one that Neptune has, or Poseidon, the Trishula, even the Hindu gods have it. They have very specific symbols that they love, these houses of these seraphims, with the mighty one on top, you know, the Zeus of them all, if you will. They want to graft themselves into the various houses into the race that was made in the image of God. And I mean you look at the Bible and you think all the many tribes of hybrids that are mentioned of Nephilim and how they marry into human tribes, and all of these human tribes who are ruled by them come one by one under judgment. But which is the tribe that receives the most extreme judgment of all? That is spoken, that their name must be blotted out of heaven completely, that every one of them must be destroyed. It is the great Amalekite nation that dares to marry into Abraham's family directly, into the covenant family. And so the hybrids mix with Abraham, and that tribe receives the largest judgment of all. So there's this attempt to connect into the bloodlines, to form new royal families, and to form a new race. And this has been going on, and it has been stopped by God many times after the flood, well, the flood itself. And then after the flood, there is basically, it seems, that Abraham's family, both of his lines of children, both Esau and Jacob, they are both assigned the task to finish these guys off, and they do.
All right, let me stop you there, Ali, because pre-flood, and this was the justification, I suppose, for the flood, was to cleanse the gene pool, because only Noah and his family were pure, and the rest of the inhabitants of the planet were essentially hybrids. So after the flood, when fallen angels, or rather the Nephilim, are marrying into these bloodlines, as you say, are they still producing an offspring of giants? And if so, where are they?
Yeah. So as I said, they were killed off by Israel and by Esau, and by also Lot's children. And the Bible is very clear in painstakingly documenting all of this for us in the book of Deuteronomy and Numbers. And so the last of them are destroyed at the time of King David, which is only 1,000 years ago, where David fights Goliath, who's the leader of Gath.
Not 1,000 years ago. You said 1,000.
Yes, David lived 1,000 years ago.
1,000 years ago was...
No, sorry, David lived 1,000 B.C.
Right.
3,000 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was thinking 1,000 B.C. Yeah, so they, at the time of King David, they are being now completely finished off. But from the time of the flood, which I believe is 4,000 B.C., so that's 6,000 years ago, from the time of the flood to 1,000 B.C., those 3,000 years, we see a huge amount of Nephilim presence in the Middle East, documented in the book of Genesis, Deuteronomy, and Numbers, but also documented in many, many, many other writings. In fact, we have writings that say that these guys would be hired as mercenaries to shift the balance of power in the favor of a particular clan in the Middle East. Well, by the time of King David, 3,000 years ago, we see five giants who are ruling five villages or kingdoms or cities from, you know, in their time it would have been perceived that way, among the Philistines, of which Gath, the giant who rules Gath, his name is Goliath, and he's 9 feet tall, and he's the one that David kills, and then David continues to kill many of these tribes of giants. There's, I don't know how many, it was 500 or 1,000 foreskins of these hybrids, these are giants and humans intermarried together, that he is killing and offers these foreskins to Saul. I know it sounds very barbaric.
Well, but given the amount of intermingling and so forth, yeah. And I know that they killed them off, but wouldn't there be vestiges of that hybrid blood, perhaps in most of us? I mean, aren't we all then?
Okay, so these are very good questions. I really need to address them properly because they're very important questions. So first of all, I think that partly the modern day UFO phenomenon of abduction creating hybrids is to reinvigorate this pool because it has been so drained. That's why it's happening all around the world in such a massive level. It's massive. It's because there is a lack of hybrids in the human world right now, and it's being like a flood being reintroduced into the human world because we've done such a good job, actually, or Israel and Esau and Lot, this is a great job of killing them off. Now, as far as how did it seep through past that killing off? Did some survive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? There are two answers to that. One answer would be, and that's one of the things I'm looking into, there's a whole new breed of researchers that are documenting how the ruling bloodlines of the human world, that once they are narrowed down to a few, they then quickly kind of disappear into these bloodlines and form these secret societies, even the Grail, the blood, you know, you remember that book, Holy Grail, Holy Blood?
Yes.
This was like even that was apparently a code word for the noble blood of the Nephilim that forms the ruling classes and kingdoms, and they have symbols, and they have sort of secret societies that, you know, promote this occult knowledge, which is essentially this ancient knowledge that goes back to the seven angels before the flood, to continue to reestablish, you know, through their revolutions, through their universities, through their systems, gradually a world that is more comfortable. And so they have always remained in the rulership. Even the Bible that talks about these empires, all of these empires may have had rulers that are partly of that blood. So that's one theory that I'm looking into actually right now that would be part of this new documentary. And as far as the larger question of how much of it seeped into the human world, where that's a very interesting question, because there's a parable of Jesus that may address that head on. He said that it's called the parable of the wheat and the tares. Not the wheat and the chaff. That's a different parable. This is the wheat and the tares. What are tares? Tares are things that look exactly like wheat. They run along wheat, and you can't tell the difference between tares and wheat until the time of harvest when they blossom and flower. By their flowering, you could know that they're different from the wheat. So Jesus says that one day, you know, the gardener came and planted his seed in the garden, and while he's sleeping, another one came and planted his seed in the garden. And when they blossomed, it was clear that some are wheat, some are tares, and the servant said to the gardener, should we go and tear out the tares? And he said to them, no, if you do, if you do, you will tear out the wheat as well. Wait until the time of the harvest comes at the end. Then you will take out the tares and burn them and then put the wheat in my barns. And when they came in private, the disciples said to him, what did you mean by this parable? What was the meaning of it? He said to them, as shocking as it may sound, because we have read this many times, but never took it so literally, he says to them that the first guy who planted his seeds in the garden is God. But then the enemy, the devil, came and planted his seed in the garden too.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly you're like, what? Like you have to understand, the word in Greek would have been sperma, okay? So at this point, there's two things growing side by side, but they are completely all over each other and intermingled to the point that if you kill one, you may kill the other. And then he explains that the servants are the angels, and that the time of the blossoming is the end of the age, which we call the second coming in modern Christian lingo. And at this time, you know, God will then separate. Finally, the blossoming happens. It's very clear, you know, in the terminal generation, who is of which kind of line. And the ones, the tares are destroyed and the wheats are put in God. So this would suggest that the contamination is very large. And perhaps even the fact that we live sometimes lives in our minds and characters and hearts where we don't live up to the decrees of our own conscience, to the decrees of what we know is true and right and beautiful and godly, perhaps it's actually because of this contamination. And some have now gone to say that the Christ's work on this earth had three purposes, and one of it was to give us a new body. Because of this contamination, we need a new body.
So is it possible, Ali, is it possible that you could have some Nephilim blood? I could have some Nephilim blood?
Yes.
And does that mean that we are damned?
No. I think it's a combination of what makes us up completely as a whole, who we are as a whole, and where our heart is, that kind of really points to what's inside of us. We aspire to. We are at this point in history. There's a lot of mix that's gone into the soup that's making us. So I don't think that is. You know, I think God. That's why God is giving us a new body, and that's why there's a doctrine of grace, because we are, you know, unable just to live the way that we are asked because of who we are.
Got it. Another quick question. We're almost out of time. Why aren't these hybrids giants? Why is the commingling of the fallen angels and humans no longer producing a race of giants?
In the modern world, our population is too large, and we're a lot more enlightened, and they are taking a more subterfuge. They're making it very sexy. First of all, they're entering like ninja and infiltrating the culture, and that's what the new documentary is going to talk about, the massive infiltrations. The first documentary was about the creation of modern-day hybrids. This one is about explaining how infiltrated they are into culture. There's even a group of them that live around, you know, in Oshawa, apparently. Even though last time I said that on a show, my computer went dead, and so I don't know.
A race of hybrids that live in Oshawa, okay.
Yeah. They're among us in the culture, and they want to keep it very, very secret. There's a huge command that's gone out from high above, keep the secret, hush, hush, until the time is ready, until the signal is given. So there's this other part of the story, which is they're trying to make the whole UFO phenomenon and reinvent themselves in a very sexy, enlightened manner, like our older enlightened brothers have arrived to help us into the age of Aquarius, you know, like the day the earth stood still type of thing, the movie. So they're trying to rebrand themselves, and part of this rebranding is this stealth infiltration in the culture where they look like us. The ancient world where people worship the gods and their gigantic children, doesn't resonate with us. And if we saw any of that happening around us, we'd all just call 911 and get together and like just kill them.
Exactly.
Right? And we're strong. We always win. The story of the Bible is clear. We win over the Titans over and over and over again. And this time, too, we will win over them because victory comes from above and has been given to us through the line of Seth.
Last question. Your position, and I happen to share this position, that extraterrestrials are, in fact, fallen angels. That puts us in diametrically opposed to much of the UFO community, as you know, that
yes.
They even see the alien abduction phenomena in a positive light,
right.
That they are here to enlighten us, and yes. They're studying us, and that people like you and me, I don't know, we're members of Majestic 12, we're trying to deceive people in thinking that that aliens are here to do evil. How do we bridge that?
Okay.
I mean, the two camps are not
aliens,
on the same page.
I get it. These aliens are part of a larger community of aliens. They're not all bad, because the God's aliens, if you will, if you have to use that language, God's angels are also on their way, and it says in the Bible that God will arrive with his chariots. It says that right in Isaiah 66. And to bring judgment to the earth. So God and his chariots are on the way as well, and so there's a larger group of aliens that are good. Of course, God is, you know, above all of these things, but he's partaking inside of his creation, so he's with them, living it out. So there's a larger community that, if you want to look into the stars and look into the heavens and look for something that's good, that is also there. You don't have to always just shun the larger story. There is good. The reason these guys are not the good ones is because of what they're doing to people, the abductions, the creation of hybrids, the self. Everything points to something that's nefarious. Because they have a history with us that's recorded in all of our literature and including the Bible that tells us who they are, that the earth was left for dead, that the nations were cast out from the presence of God and given to the control of those angels who are also cast out from the presence of God. They and us were on the same side of the fence, and they got to rule the nations until God began to redeem us through Abraham, in whose seed all the families of the earth would be blessed.
Got it. So some close encounters, Ali, some close encounters could actually be with not fallen angels, but let's say the archangels. Those could be actual UFO encounters.
Yeah. It says test every spirit that you see it, but the Bible is clear. It says, you know, entertain, be hospitable, because some have entertained angels unawares. People see angels all the time in the Bible, and people even today will tell you they have these encounters. I've had one that I can't explain.
We'll talk about that on the next. We'll have to talk about that next time. Ali, we're out of time. Leave us with a website where people can learn more.
ThinkAgainProductions.com. Watch the documentary. Email me and sign up for the newsletter and the YouTube page, ThinkAgainProductions.com.
And the first documentary is UFOs, Angels, and Gods. The new project is Goliath Rising, Hybrids, Nephilim, and Titans.
Yes. And I'm also working on a book I hope will be out by the middle of next year. And it's going really well, and I'm very excited about that. And I'm working on a series called UFOs, Angels, and Gods Decoded, where this will be on YouTube, and if you sign up for the YouTube channel, you can listen to this, where I'll be explaining in detail all the points that we rose in a hurried way.
Ali Siadatan, thinkagainproductions.com. Thank you so much, my friend.
You're welcome. Thank you, Richard, for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I want to tell you about what's coming up next on Conspiracy Unlimited. But first, I have to ask, have you heard about this free guide you can download? It contains a list of online power tools that can make you more efficient, secure, even boost your income. And best of all, this online toolbox guide is absolutely free. How do you get it? It's simple. Just visit freebusinesstoolbox.com and grab your copy while they last. This guide has some of the very same online tools that successful business owners use every day, and each one is highly recommended. I know there are a lot of websites out there. They offer a special giveaway like this, and then they want to stick you into a recurring program or some other thing. This isn't like that. No way. There's no hidden thing to try. No credit card needed. No cost whatsoever. BrightBiz is literally giving away this online toolbox guide completely free as a means of putting their best foot forward. But this is a limited time offer. So grab your free guide today and take your business and your income to the next level. Visit freebusinesstoolbox.com and get your free guide to 36 online power tools. That address again, freebusinesstoolbox.com. Coming up on episode 12 of Conspiracy Unlimited, Kevin Barry is the author of Vaccine Whistleblower, Exposing Autism Research Fraud at the CDC, a firsthand account from a CDC insider on the link between vaccines and autism. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need... We need constant petting.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.